Hey, thanks for downloading the How'd That Happen podcast, the show that finds people doing cool things and asks the question, how'd that happen? Today's guest is Travis Ault. He's a marathon veteran and just last year completed a 50-mile off-road ultramarathon. We're going to ask him, how'd that happen?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for giving us a listen today. We are the How'd That Happen podcast. If you get a chance, check us out on Facebook. You can check us out at How'd That Happen. That's HOW'D. Or shoot us an email. We'd love to see some feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys. Our email address is hthpodcast@gmail.com. I am Tony, and with me today is Adam. Adam, what's new?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm doing pretty good. Coming down with another cold.
Wow, that happens when you have so many children in your household.
Yeah, I got four little guys. I had about 4 days here recently where I didn't have stuff in my sinuses.
Is that a new record, 4 days?
It was a nice little break.
I mean,
in my house, we're basically sick from about September through June.
Well, you're on then.
So this is it.
This is the time.
We're in the beginning.
So
buckle up.
That's why I'm wearing a bag on my head right now.
It's got a SARS mask. Yeah, so that's what's going on with me, man. Just getting sick, but no big deal. I'm doing fine. What about you, Tony?
Well, today's kind of a sad day
in the
Lando, Tony. Yeah.
Tell me about it, Tony.
You know, just before coming down here to record this, I was fixing myself up a nice couple slices of pizza, leftover pizza.
You were microwaving it?
On the contrary. I had contraband toaster oven.
A toaster oven.
That's right.
I like it.
Yeah. There's concern about burning the building down or something like that.
Okay, that's like frowned upon.
Like that's a big deal or something.
Yeah.
So I literally, while we were sitting here, I got an email from my boss saying, I hate to say it, but you got to stop doing that. There were a lot of complaints. So I'm kind of sad.
Yeah. Well.
Hopefully that doesn't come through too much
in this. Was this your first time using the toaster oven?
No, but it's the first time I've used it in this particular location around these people.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's go right back at them. I say we petition them to provide a proper toaster oven and a proper environment that we can use to prepare some delicious reheated pizza.
That's a fine idea, because there's nothing beats a toaster oven warm-up.
Lots of people would love that.
Especially a microwave. Microwave is not good for pizza.
Come on.
Yeah.
You're zapping your food with these... You know, microwaves, that's not good.
It's probably bad for you. I mean,
we're
all going to die from
stuff.
Yeah, bad stuff that we get from microwaves.
Bad stuff that we get from doing the stuff that we do.
Yeah, bad.
Yeah. How long does it take you to prepare pizza in a toaster oven?
Not very. It's pretty amazing.
Really? So, you know, if you picture a community toaster oven...
I'd guess it's...
Would you get clogged up if everybody wants to use it? Or?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, any worse than a toaster?
I don't know how much demand... No, definitely not. It might take 3 to 5 minutes.
And they do that, right? There's toasters.
Yeah.
So why not a toaster oven? Which just is that much more useful. I think we're onto something. I mean, because they have cappuccino machines, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's stupid. Caffeine, in my opinion, and maybe I need to talk about this.
It's a drug.
Yeah.
I mean, Bayer might have made that.
Maybe they did. Maybe they were the first to prepare that.
All right. Well, so we're really excited about today's episode. We've got a gentleman by the name of Travis here who's a multiple marathon runner. One of the things that we found most intriguing, at least I did, was that he's run an ultra marathon, which is a 50 miler. Lots of cool stuff. What are your thoughts, Adam?
It's crazy, the preparation. The event is crazy. The recovery was an interesting thing. A lot of stuff I don't know about because I don't run. I did one time, I think I ran over 2 miles once.
2 miles, nice.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of far.
Yeah.
And then, this is a foreign world to me. I've never been into it. I don't want to be into it. I'm not going to get into it. But I'm really fascinated with people who are, and it's an interesting
thing. Because it's a whole mental state, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for someone to want to do that,
yeah,
you know, it's a totally different mindset.
You want to, you're committed to it, you're doing it. Okay, I'm still doing it. I'm going to keep doing it.
For hours.
Yeah.
Hours, every day.
Yeah.
6 days a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's a big commitment. And we're excited to share that with you guys. I think there's a lot of really cool information there and lots of neat stories. So today is an exciting day for the podcast. So coming up in the episode here, we've got Adam's random facts.
That's right, man.
I always enjoy those. Adam's got some kind of funny random stories, facts, stories from history or from different points of society. And then we also are going to introduce a little segment that might be periodic, but it's going to be called Your New Favorite Band. And that's something where we're going to introduce you to a band that we think is pretty cool. More so Adam, because Adam's really into the indie scene more so, but I always enjoy him sharing his new discoveries with me.
Yeah, well, I just want to clarify that if your favorite band is Wild Bears Attack Elephants, it won't be your new favorite band. That will still be your favorite. These guys, whoever it is we're talking about, may be second. So for the
and for those of you who aren't familiar with Wild Bears Attack Elephants, go check them out. They're phenomenal. Look them up on Facebook. Look them up on Google. You know, download some of their stuff. Doesn't cost that much. Great music. Like, for example, the intro music is Wild Bears Attack Elephants.
That's right. That's me and my friends playing music.
It's great. It's awesome. Yeah. So we're gonna introduce some bands you haven't heard of. You know, maybe from time to time bands that you have, but you'll start to see that as a somewhat recurring segment.
Yeah. Yeah. The tricky part is getting bands to say, okay, yeah, go ahead and play my song on your podcast, because that's what I'd like to do. I like to say, here's a band and here's their song at the end of the podcast that you can check out. But that's not always easy to do. You got...
Maybe it's better to ask for forgiveness.
Well, yeah, maybe.
I like my money where it is.
Right. So, yeah. But, you know, it's tricky. You got their label who's got certain rights, and they you know, they don't want just anybody getting access to the material for nothing.
Thus the periodic piece of it.
So, yeah. But occasionally we're able to get a hold of some people and say, hey, we love your stuff. Can we just tell our friends about it? You know? So we got one for you today. So that's going to be cool.
Pretty cool. I'm excited about it. Yeah. It's usually a learning opportunity for me, too. So sit tight.
Yeah. So first, though, let's get into the random fact.
Random facts.
Yep. We're going to do one today. And, you know, we want to keep it lighthearted here in the HDH podcast. So we're going to talk about heroin. Yeah, you know. But here's an interesting fact, and I'll say right up front, I get a lot of these from listening to the Daily Knowledge podcast. I mentioned that before, but I'm just going to say it again. You know, it's just it's a fun one, and I figure, hey, why not tell all of our listeners about that, you know, something we can talk about. So this is an interesting one about heroin. So where did heroin come from? How did it get developed?
Please tell.
Yeah. It was the Bear Corporation, okay? The guys who...
Like Wild Bear Attack Elephant?
It is not. Oh. It's Bear, B-A-Y-E-R, the corporation that most famous for aspirin, right?
Where would we be without aspirin?
It's delicious. And in the 1800s, they developed this stuff. So they got their research lab guys. So they discover how to synthesize heroin, and they start experimenting with it on themselves. They start clinical trials in 1898. So they're testing it out. They're like, hey, this is really good. This is great for pain. It's better than morphine. It's great as a cough suppressant. So that's initially how they marketed this stuff, was as a non-addictive cough suppressant. So, and it worked extremely well as a sedative and a respiration depressor, which it might sound weird. Why would you market heroin as a cough suppressant? But during that time, it was tuberculosis and pneumonia killing tons of people. So there's lots of people that can't get rest because they're having coughing fits basically their entire, you know, as they're dying. So they test out heroin. They say, hey, this is great. Let's get it out there. It becomes a smash hit. All right. People love
Shocking.
It.
Shocking. I can't believe it.
This stuff is great. Let's put it in cough syrups. Let's put it in tablets and elixirs, and it's out there. And then, you know, the reports start coming back. Hey, this might be addictive, actually. This seems to be bad in some ways, that maybe the Bear Corporation didn't quite see that coming.
You know, people going to work, you know, on an assembly line or something. Yeah, maybe they didn't have assembly lines then, did they? But, you know, in an industrial setting.
Right.
guys losing fingers.
Yeah, everything was dangerous in 1898.
That is a good point.
Nothing was safe.
That's true.
You go to a farm, you're going to lose an arm. It's just like...
Yeah, toys were made of nails.
Right.
Yeah.
Extremely dangerous. Yeah. So they realize it's addictive. They say, hey, okay, wait a minute. 15 years later, they finally get around to discontinuing it.
15 years.
Yeah, 1913, they discontinued production. But then they discontinue that, and they say, hey, you know what? We got this other thing that's kind of been on the back burner. Maybe we should start working on selling aspirin. So since the heroin thing's done.
It's novel.
Yeah, and they had released that in 1899 around the same time, but it really started to take off later once aspirin, once heroin was done, and they start getting more focused on aspirin. Which aspirin originally, when they pitched that to the kind of the head dude at Bayer, he's like, this is useless. I see this as having no commercial use.
That's funny.
Yeah. So it's kind of a big deal now.
Well, it's interesting now that we know who Scott Weiland has to thank.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you for Tiny Music from the Vatican gift shop.
Exactly. And really, we should be thanking Bayer for such great Stone Temple Pilot music.
That's right.
Without heroin, I don't know that we would have Big Bang Baby.
And then it also wrecked it at the same time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Kind of bittersweet.
Yeah. So there's that. All right. So let's talk about Travis Ault. All right. This guy is a coworker of Tony and I at Gordon Food Service, which if you listen to the first podcast with Jeff Howard, also a coworker at Gordon Food Service. Yeah, this is a big place. Lots of people, lots of stories. All right. All sorts of people that we could, can, and will do podcasts.
That's right. Right? It'll probably be a continuing theme as
yeah,
we
yeah, you're
going to
hear
this.
That.
I mean, really, because that's our circle. We know. We don't know anybody except
these
the
are
people
our people.
Here.
You yeah. know, we work in an office with, what, 1,400, 1,500 people?
Far too many.
And they're going to start reducing starting with us soon. So
they may have already. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So as Tony mentioned, Travis has been running marathons for a long time. He's run several of them. In 2013, he said, let's amp it up. Let's run a 50-mile race, competing in the North Country Run in Wellson, Michigan, which is about 100 miles north of Grand Rapids.
Really, who wouldn't? Who yeah. wouldn't amp it up
yeah.
to that?
Yeah, let's do a 50-miler. So, Travis, how'd that happen?
The 50-miler? Well, it actually all kind of spans back to back in like 2003 or 2004 when I had a buddy who, this was before I ever ran at all, and he had dared me that he didn't think I could even finish a 5K. And so it actually all started out as doing like a 5K, and from there, man, I had the first race I ever did was a Grand Rapids, the Fifth Third Riverbank Run.
Yeah.
And so I did the 5K then, and then it was just like, I just got addicted, and from there...
So hang on a second, Travis. You mean, Tom, you didn't run in high school? You didn't
10 years ago, you're like 24 at that time, 23, I don't know how old
yeah.
you are. Yeah.
Yeah, it was mid-20s, so right there.
Never,
but yeah,
never
ran.
Never ran competitively at all?
No, yeah, not at all. So
at this point, your kids are like 3 probably, you know, so...
Yeah, so...
Not many people pick up running at that point.
The most I had ran before that was doing 2 miles for baseball tryouts, and then they caught me, so I didn't have to do that anymore. So,
well, I never had to run for baseball.
So it stopped then.
Yeah, Claire. Yeah. So I had never ran before, and actually I was relatively overweight at that time too, so right around like 200 pounds. But and then from
yeah,
there,
that's bad for being 4'3". Just kidding, Travis isn't.
I was a joke.
I can't picture you. All overweight. I've only ever known the marathoner Travis Ault.
Really, back in the game days?
I don't know.
I don't remember noticing that he was overweight, but I definitely noticed that he's
the gaunt
much
look.
Thinner.
The Ethiopian look.
Yeah, did
without
you eat
the speed.
Today? This is during lunch, so are you going to eat today, Travis? I'm concerned
we'll
about you.
I've got a crouton back at my desk.
So, anyways, back to the story itself. I think that's awesome that this all started on a challenge. So, was it a bet? It was just a challenge? What was it?
Yeah, no, it was more of just for, like, pride. So, I did it, and, you know, I could rub it in his face. But then, it was just, like, I got addicted just from the competitive standpoint.
Yeah, you get done with that race, and you're like, when's the next one? What's the next? Same distance or greater distance after that? Do you, like, say, I'm going to step it up, or...
Yeah, from there, I mean, I did a ton of different 5Ks within the next like 2 to 3 years, and then I tried like a 10K, and I haven't really done many of those. But from there, then I did the 25K at the Riverbank Run, and then from there, and that's 15 and a half miles.
Yeah, for non-runners.
Yeah.
Or standard measurement system people.
Yeah. For the non-Europeans.
Non-Canadians.
That too.
That's for the Americans. Yeah. Everybody's metric except for us.
That's true.
Because the system makes so much sense.
You mean a system that...
It's base 10.
You mean the system that was devised on the length of a king's foot doesn't make sense?
I mean, I like the idea, but...
It's pretty awesome and random. Anyways.
Okay.
We did.
So you run a 5K in like 2003 or 4 or something like that, yep, or whatever, and then you get to the point where you're doing, would you say, 25K?
Yeah, that's where, you know, I just, after getting that bug, I wanted to take that next challenge, and then I did a number of 25Ks.
Yeah.
And then once I felt like I got kind of the hang of that, that's when I took the next step to doing the marathons.
So what year was your first marathon?
It was 2009. I did that at the Chicago Marathon.
So 6 years
marathon.
Later, you had quite a little history there of some pretty decent races, 25K and stuff, and your training regimen's probably pretty well established at that point, too.
You know, it was pretty crappy. I mean, for like the 25K, the first time I did that, the most I ran was like 10 miles, and knowing I still had another 5.5 to be able to do after that, and I had an epic meltdown in my first one. I'm getting like a quarter-sized blister on the back of my ankle with 3 miles left. But, so with those, the training was pretty crappy up until, in 2009, that's when I really started to amp things up just with knowing I was going to do that marathon. But, from there, that was my first one. And then the week after I did the Chicago Marathon, I did the Grand Rapids Half.
A week after?
Yeah, a week after.
Wow.
So
you're still sore from the marathon.
Oh, absolutely. But...
In hindsight, was that the right decision?
That was a pretty poor choice.
I was just curious.
No, yeah, it felt awful. It was one of those when I got finished where, like, I was just surprised I got to the finish line because I was just so beat. And, I mean, normally they tell you to wait, like, a good, for every mile that you run for long distance to be able to take that many days off.
Oh.
So it was probably
starting
a good
three and a half
weeks.
So when you run a 5K, you don't expect to take 3 days off, right? So
no.
What is that? What is that suggested time frame? Where does that start?
I think they would say any time for like a half marathon and up.
Okay.
I think they've said. So I probably should have taken some time off after the marathon, but gave it a try. But overall.
Mad props.
Travis Ault Maverick fashion. I'm doing it. When's that? A week after?
That.
Sign me up.
For sure.
So when you say that your training got more precise when you were going for the marathon, how'd you figure out how to train? Did you like read a book or get some guidelines from someone or something?
No, for the most part, like for the Chicago Marathon, they have like a scheduled training program that you can follow.
got one here.
That's something that the Chicago Marathon offers.
Yep.
Like, so they say, here's your, you registered, here's some information about the marathon, here's a training schedule we would advise you to utilize.
Yeah, so all depending on your level or where you are within running. So they had intermediate, beginners, and then like experienced. So I basically use that, and I still actually use that today for any marathons I do now. But
same one.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So
it works.
Really, how it all kind of ramped up for doing the ultra is back in I think it was 2012 is when I ran the marathon and I missed qualifying for Boston by like 9 seconds, and I was so pissed off.
Brutal.
I was so angry at the end that yes, I actually did cry at the end of it because I was so beat.
Well, you're exhausted.
That's what I'm blaming it on.
Very emotional. Yeah.
So
you're ready to go do it again.
Well, I was so upset that I signed up for a marathon the next February. So the Groundhog's Day Marathon, and that was done like in the snow outside. And then I signed up for the Lansing Marathon, and then I signed up for the Ultra because I wanted to make sure that I was like extremely prepared for the following October. So last year in 2013.
When you say the following October, you mean you wanted to be like, I'm signing up for all this stuff to make sure I'm ready for the next marathon qualifying.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Yeah, so I did the two marathons earlier in the year in February and April, and then the ultra in August, and then I did another marathon in October. So
my assumption then, and hopefully you can clarify here, that there are only certain marathons that you can do that actually qualify you for the Boston Marathon?
Yeah, so they've got to be like USATF certified.
Okay, and that's it. The Chicago Marathon is?
Yep, yeah, and so is Grand Rapids. Oh, okay. So, yeah, there's a lot of them. They just have to have somebody come out and kind of not test the course, but kind of walk the course to be able to make sure it's actually 26.2 miles from like point to point, so as you're turning. So, but yeah, so it all kind of started out as that, and why I signed up for that more or less to be able to kind of keep my training up. And that was once I got done with the Lansing Marathon in April, I started to ramp up for the Big M or the North Country Trail Run.
So did your training regimen change at all at that
yeah, point? I had, I mean, doing 50 miles. So, I mean, I was used to my longest run being 20 miles for like a marathon. With the training program that I pulled off, it was the most I got up to was 28 for that. And then,
that's pretty weak. 28 miles.
Yeah, it feels pretty weak. Well, it's just a training run today. I'm only going 28.
No, but yeah, man, I would get up at, so for like some of the longest runs for that, the trail marathon, I would get up at like 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday and get like a gallon of Gatorade and go out to Luton Park, which is out in Rockford. And I would do, it's like a 9 mile loop, and I'd do like three of those.
Wow.
And dude, that was always pretty interesting to be able to do that, but yeah, it was.
And then, so while you're training, you follow the same rules of, I just ran 28 miles, I should take some time off. Like, how much time you take off?
No, but that's the thing.
Because it's training, so you don't take that much time off for that, right? So,
Well, that's the thing. A lot of for the ultra, they would have you run for, like, the longest one, like I said, was, like, 28 miles. Yeah. But then they wanted you to go out on Sunday and do, like, another 12.
Wow.
Okay.
The next day. And like I physically couldn't do that.
So when you're running running 28 though, you're probably not running quite as hard, right? Is that safe to say, or are you giving it all?
You're trying to maintain a certain pace.
Yeah, I was going a lot slower. So and it's a trail race, so you go a lot slower on dirt and unpacked roads than you would on pavement. So, but yeah, I'd go a lot slower. I'd basically try and keep it right around like a 9 to 10 minute pace for that's 28 miles and the trail run and training.
Anyways. I have to laugh at that because most people that are not runners would be lucky to run a mile at that pace. You know what I mean?
I think I might be able to. It's a maybe.
Well, I'm pretty sure you could because you're 50. In pretty good shape, but there are a lot of people around nice. That, you know, that's a
awesome.
Decent pace.
It's
for
impressive.
Somebody that's not experienced.
Well, yeah, that's what I started off on. I mean, for my first 5K, I think it was like just under a 9 minute pace. And so, I mean, it is crazy to be able to see the progression as I kind of amped up my training program and ran more and all that type of stuff to be able to just see the pace drop. But
so the training program for the 50 miler, when you started amping it up, did that come from them too? Did they have a program, or how did you figure out what you wanted to do?
For that, I just Googled it.
Okay, so then you're just doing research and finding stuff.
You know, I think I'm going to put a document out there with no expertise that says this is what you're training. I'm an expert. Here's your training regimen.
This is the Tony Niebuhr Ultra Marathon training regimen.
Do a lab, drink a beer.
Three slices of pizza after 10 miles.
So,
no gut rot.
But no, man, yeah, the day of that race, that was I remember going up. I can't remember how far we stayed away from Wellston, but I think it was like 45 minutes. I can't remember where it was. But I got, for that race, I was so nervous and so anxious. I got an hour and a half of sleep that night.
Oh.
And because, I didn't know the people who we were staying with. Mm. And we were 45 minutes away, and I was so nervous that we're going to miss it on top of running 50 miles. So 22 more miles than what I had run for my training. So I got an hour and a half of sleep that night, and I was so tired even before the race game or even before it started.
Yeah.
So
wow.
But yeah, the race too was it was sweet and it was awesome. So some of the, as you're running, going around some of the aid stations, they would have like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Mm-hmm. They had ramen noodles, a bunch of this like regular food.
Yeah.
And they
see, that should be part of the training schedule.
See,
ramen.
Yeah.
It was pretty sweet though. I did.
So you're eating that stuff while you're in the middle of the.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm eating sandwiches. So for the most part, I would stop, like literally stop and eat and then go again. But is the first lap actually was uneventful. I actually felt pretty good and got done with the 25 miles. And I was still really tired. And I wanted to bail, mainly from the standpoint because I was so tired. But Ryan Benink was coming up there. He was going to run the last 15 with me. So,
right.
I knew I couldn't bail when knowing that he had to drive 2 hours north to be able to get to me. But and the second lap, I was maybe like 2 miles in, and there was literally no one around me. I didn't know if I had taken a wrong turn or not. So I had stopped, and I'm waiting, and I'm looking around for people. And I'm like, oh, crap. I'm like, I took the wrong turn. I'm like, whatever, I'll just keep on running. And I got a couple more miles, and then that's when it started to hit me where I was just so spent. And yeah. I had a couple of times I thought about just, I just need to take a nap. I need to stop, and I need to get some sleep.
Oh, wow.
And then I had sat down on a log, and that's where I'd, you know, think about, man, the ground looks nice and comfy right here. And then that was about probably like maybe 30 miles in.
And yeah, and how long did it take you to get that 30 miles? You're how many hours in?
So the first 25 miles took me, I think it was about probably 3.5-4 hours. It was probably right around like 4 hours.
Yeah.
I think I was actually under 10 minutes a mile. I think it was about 9.5 minute miles through the first 25. Okay. And then everything just started falling apart.
Yeah, and then you're like, I need to sleep. My body is breaking down.
And so my wife was there, and she was 8 months pregnant. And so she would meet me at some of the stopping points. And one of the funny things that happened where I thought it was 100% normal, they would they had like these huge sponges with nice ice cold water, and so as you stop for the aid stations, they would squeeze it over your head. And my wife and her sister, who was there too, thought it was I was enjoying it way too much because of like the moaning that I was doing. But but I was so spent, and it would wake you up, and it felt awesome. But
yeah,
apparently I. something else was going on too.
So yeah, you're kind of vocal then a little bit. That's cool. Okay. All right. Moving on. Well, yeah. Some things will get cut. Not everything's gonna make.
Not
it.
That though.
You don't like my moaning.
Yeah, no, that's not.
No, that
cut.
Stays. That stays. Yeah. So as you're preparing for something like that, and you got this crazy training regimen, what's it like to, like. Is your caloric intake just crazy just to maintain that amount of activity, or how, what's...
Yeah, it is. I can't remember, like, how much you average for, like, every mile that you run. I think it's, like, on right around, like, 100 to 120 calories that you burn for every mile that you run.
Okay.
And I think it depends on how fast you're running, too. But so after, I mean, just thinking about that for 28 miles, even for the training run, of, like, how much you're burning... And yeah. Apparently there's a lot of science that goes along with it too, just from the matter of you need to make sure that you're taking in sodium and potassium.
You got to get the right stuff.
Thus the peanut butter and jelly and ramen noodles, right?
Yeah, because if you're taking too much water, it hasn't happened to me yet, but some crazy stuff can happen.
Really?
Yeah, I mean just from there's an actual name out there for like a not a chemical reaction of what happens to you, but you could get like really sick.
Yeah.
It's like you've just overloaded your body, or your water level's way up here and your sodium level's right there. And then vice versa too, you can have something happen where you have too much sodium and then you actually start to hallucinate. And
whoa.
Like I've had that before where I didn't drink enough and where I was running and falling asleep at the same time.
Wow.
So that was bad news.
Yeah.
So I was really dehydrated.
But and so you were, did you recognize that in the middle of it and like, I got to stop or like?
No.
You just get done. No, you're like,
For the 50 miler, that didn't happen. For like a marathon, I thought I could run, and the less I stopped at some of the aid stations, the better, and I'd have a better time. But there's, right. I was, my eyes were like slits, and I just had to stop and guzzle some Gatorade to get my wits about me. But
yeah, well, I was gonna say when you talked about taking a nap on the 50 miler, I think it caused quite a stir. Somebody comes across a sleeping dude on the side. we got somebody who died. This guy's dead.
Well, it's probably not that uncommon either, though.
This stuff happens, I'm sure.
No, but yeah, I think for when I went out there, I had like Baby Ruths. So something that was like sweet and salty and gummy bears. And
so you just had them in a fanny pack or something like that?
It's a sports utility pack. It is not a fanny pack.
It is sports utility.
I resent that word.
Like a man purse.
Yeah, but fanny pack. It was quite the experience, and just trying to make sure that, like you said, with all the nutritional type stuff, making sure everything was balanced.
Yeah, and even on a regular basis, like while you're just training, you still, I mean, that's a big part of that too. You're running 28 miles, you're running 12, like you're constantly maintaining the right stuff and, you know, enough calories and the right kind of nutrients.
Yeah.
Well, and that's something that I probably would never think of, you know, to make sure that you've got the right food in your body when you're doing this.
Well, it's similar to the preparation I do for the wiffle ball tournament in the September every year.
Yeah.
It's very serious and intense.
Stretching.
I have a nutritionist on staff for the tournament that kind of advises the players.
You have to. Little Andro.
We're not talking about that. Okay.
All right, moving on. So, Travis, as you keep going through this race, you're feeling worse and worse, I assume.
Yeah. You could say that.
I mean, do you even remember a lot of it?
Yeah. You know, more towards the end where, like, I was... I didn't have that sensation of where I was falling asleep, like, in the marathon that I was speaking of earlier. But, like, my calves were cramping up. And, like, they would cramp up so bad to where my, like, leg would just give out and I would have to grab a tree so I wouldn't fall. But a lot of it, especially towards the end, like, all I could think about was one, not crying because I wanted to stop so bad, and then just being done. I didn't care at that moment. And so knowing, like, even with 40 miles in, it felt like it was like 2 miles left, like the end was so close, but it was miserable.
So it's not only physical, there's a lot of mental.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's probably the biggest hurdle, actually, especially when you've trained and you're in good physical condition. It's probably more of a mental thing than it is even physical.
Yeah, and that's why I had to have Ryan Bennick there to be able to be that, I guess, the voice of reason, someone to be able to push me.
And that's normal, right? I've read about ultramarathoning and stuff like that. There's usually a certain set point where they say, all right, you can have a pacer for the rest. Someone to help you go and not give up.
From a safety standpoint, right? Just in case you collapse. And here you are in the middle of a 25-mile, you know,
right.
Yeah, route.
You're going to need somebody to help you navigate the woods just because you don't know where you are and you're delusional.
Yeah, yeah, for the most part. I mean, I've only done that one, but I would think it's pretty common.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, I mean, he was able to push me through and, I don't know, kind of tough-talk me at times, too. He's like, stop being such a wimp. Like, do you want to finish this thing or do you want to, you know, stay out here and take longer? Like, dude, shut up. Like, I know you're right, but.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, it was it was pretty intense.
So once it was all done, though, I can't imagine the sense of gratification or the sense of, you know, accomplishment that.
Yeah, I was pretty pumped. I mean, granted, I mean, it's out in the woods, so you don't have a ton of, I guess, fanfare or people out there cheering for you. But, like, when I finished, it was, like, another one of those times where I was just, like, you're just kind of overwhelmed with emotion. One, from just being done and knowing that you finished, and another of just, like, it seems ridiculous to be able to run for 50 miles.
It is ridiculous.
It is, yeah.
It is, not just seems. It is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you got to feel great about that, and you've also then earned the right to really make fun of some other people who can't do it. Yeah, like us right now. Yeah. Would you like to take a second to tell us how what wimps we are?
You can make fun of marathoners.
Yeah. Oh, you're running a marathon. Good for you, little guy. Tell me how it goes.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
But yeah, man, after I finished that thing, I mean, the craziest thing in the world is, like, I was not hungry at all. Actually, the sound of, that was another thing that I was fighting through the entire time, too, is just nausea. Just, like, I came so close to just vomiting so many different times.
Yeah.
Just from, like, eating was just repulsive.
Wow.
Especially in the last half of the race, because you're just so, that has to do with some of the not having enough either liquids or enough sodium, and where your body just starts to reject food.
And so, I bet 4 hours later there wasn't enough pizza in the area to satisfy you.
No, man. After I finished, and so they had beer at the end for you to drink, and you know, Gatorade and all that type of stuff. And I went home right after the race, and we stopped and got something to eat. And like, I got like a foot long sub, and I ate maybe like 3 inches of the sub because it was just.
Wow.
I wasn't hungry, and it was just too much.
How long did it take you to get back to normal?
It was like the next day. And so the race was on a Saturday, and it was just like, I ate like an absolute hog. Yeah, it was just like nonstop eating for the entire day.
And then like eating and sleeping, I mean, you're just like sleeping for 3 days, just your body trying to recover? Or?
Well, that's a funny thing about when you run that long, you think that you'd sleep awesome, but I slept like crap. I mean, because your body's just so absolutely sore. Any type of movement, you know, it was painful.
Wow.
And it was interesting coming back in on Monday to work and just trying to go up and down stairs. Like, I almost fell down the stairs a number of times because, like, you're supposed to, like, when you're so tired like that and your quads are just shot, you, going downstairs, you need to walk down backwards.
Oh, okay.
And
did you
just look like a tool doing that. So what's wrong with this dude?
Sorry, I just ran a 50-miler yesterday.
If I saw Travis walking down the stairs backwards, I wouldn't think anything of it.
He's lost it.
Not sure I'd think twice, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty normal.
But
yeah, so how long before you started to feel like, I can move with only a moderate amount of discomfort? You know, like...
It was about I took a week off from running, and so... And I ran again, so a week after the race, I ran, and it was pretty uncomfortable. I was still extremely sore after a week, which wasn't common. Like with a marathon, I'm usually ready to go easily after a week, but I didn't feel normal and for like another like 2.5 weeks after the race, I would say.
Yeah.
So, and did you get right back into your training schedule right after that week was up?
Yeah, because usually the training programs are usually like 15 to 16 weeks. And so I was within that to be able to get ready for October for Grand Rapids. But, I mean, that race took me, I think it was like 9 hours and 17 minutes. So I think that pace was like right around 11 minutes a mile overall.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
So, yeah, I was pretty happy with it. So, I think the winning guy, I think he ended up, finished like 1.5 to 2 hours ahead of me. I mean, it was like ridiculous.
Yeah, that's...
So...
There's people out there.
But...
What are you going to do?
Like, so is that race an addicting one for you? As like races have become for you? Do you have any interest in doing that again?
Yeah, well, just recently I've like thrown around the idea of doing that one again.
Really?
But the only way I'd do it is if someone was with me.
For the whole race?
For the entire race.
I volunteer, Tony.
I'm good for about 10 miles, then I'm done.
How hard is it really just to do another 40 after that 10?
Yeah, I mean, guys, another 80%. Yeah, that's not that big of a deal. Yikes.
Oh, man. Well, that's crazy, man. And the whole thing is pretty awesome.
It really is. And I guess the big thing that we were curious about in all of this was the 50-miler, but now I want to know how that led into, you know, the next part of it. So, obviously, you're doing it in preparation for a marathon.
Yep.
And specifically because you wanted to qualify for the Boston Marathon.
Oh, yeah.
So, what came after that?
So, yeah, so 2 months later, I actually, what was fortunate is that moved up in an age group, so I got an extra 5 minutes to qualify for Boston. So I ended up running.
All you needed was 9 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think for the one where I missed it by 9 seconds, I did in like 3 hours and 5 minutes and 9 seconds. And the qualifying time was like a 3:05 flat. So,
do you know that beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know
and, what? And you got to watch. You're watching the time. And you're like, watching the 3:05 approach.
Well, that's what's screwed with a lot of those races is, you know, it may say that it's a marathon, which is 26.2. But with how they kind of measure those races, it's usually a little bit longer. So it's the Grand Rapids is really 26.4. So I'm looking at my watch and looking at my pace, and I knew exactly what pace I needed to be able to hit to be able to qualify for Boston. And I'm like, man, I'm golden. I have no problem. I'm going to be able to make this easy. And so that's when I started walking. When I missed it by 9 seconds, I'd walk. I'm like, I can conserve some energy towards the end of the race and be fine. And then, you know, when I got down to the finished, it kind of cut off the seconds. So I saw 3:05, and that's when I knew. I'm like, man, I'm screwed. Like, either it's like a 1 in 60 chance of me it being 3:05 flat. So
wow.
But for 2013, I think it was, so 2 months after the 50-miler, I did like a 3:07:12. But my new qualifying time was 3:10.
Yeah, so because of the age group.
Yeah, so I was able to qualify for Boston. Actually, I'll be doing that this April. So,
this April.
Yep. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Wow, that's awesome, man. You got that trip. You're starting to plan that out. I'm guessing where you're going to stay, all that stuff. I mean,
yeah, I should get that set up, but I haven't done so yet.
Figure out. I mean,
yeah. So we'll probably make like a family vacation out of that one. But
awesome. I would hope you should probably get something set up because millions of people converge on Boston at that time, right?
Yeah, I'm not very good at planning. So
you need a running schedule for your planning.
So yeah. So that's what's next for you, the Boston Marathon. What about after that? Is there anything you got your eyes set? I mean, obviously you mentioned possibly doing that 50-miler again. Is there anything beyond that? Like you're thinking, maybe I'll do...
I briefly thought about, so after I did that 50 miler, I met a guy after the race that did this, I can't remember what it's called, the Badwater 100, but it was a 100 miler that's out in California where you run from one spot to another.
Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, so you got to qualify for that one. I looked up at my time for that. I'm like, okay, I qualified. I'm okay, maybe I'll do it. And I started looking at some of the pictures they had online for that. And one of the pictures they show of this guy's foot, the bottom of his foot, that was entirely blisters. I'm like, I'll pass on that one.
That was a promotional website?
Yeah, so I think it's just showing like how tough it is.
They want you to know what you're in for. I read an article maybe about that specific race about somebody who said, about 10 miles in, my feet got wet, so I'm blistered like crazy. I know I've got 90 miles left and my feet are going to be hamburger by the end.
That's awful.
And I thought, wow, yeah.
And
so is that what's keeping you from doing it?
Yeah, and just knowing if I couldn't sleep for a 50-miler, I can't imagine what I'd do for 100. So
can I handle the anxiety that comes along with this event?
So the 50-miler I think I could do again and be fine just because I've done it.
So do you think you're in better shape now than you were, not necessarily physical shape, but physical, mental shape, you know, training, all of that, if you were to do it again? Are you in better ready to do that again or no?
Mentally, yes. Physically, no. Not right now. Training's been crap this year, but...
Well, this winter's not looking like it's going to be one that will be beneficial for that.
Yeah, exactly. But mentally, I mean, it's just like half the battle is just knowing what to expect.
Yeah.
And so that was somebody had told me along the way saying, if you ever want to qualify for Boston, you need to run more than one marathon a year. And so just to be able to... Because if I did that, which I had been doing like Grand Rapids every year, so you kind of mentally forget the pain that you go through and like how you need to be able to push through that pain and the exhaustion and all that type of stuff. So it's like mental training too.
I'm guessing that mental toughness is maybe useful in other areas of life, you know, like maybe
raising children.
Yeah, maybe if I would push myself in some other areas, I'd actually be a decent dad, you know, stuff like that.
Whatever.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that was one thing, being away from the family quite a bit, too.
Right.
I don't know if it makes you into a better dad. Or at least that's what I was told.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the only other thing. It's just, you know, being away from the family, too. That's
But literally kind of hours and hours and hours of preparation.
And just for the training, I'd be gone from, like, 6 in the morning to, like, 10 in the morning. Just be gone. And so.
How many pairs of shoes do you go through in a year?
Usually I'll replace them like every 500 miles. So it turns out to be like every 4 months or so.
Yeah. So, all right. That's not as bad. I was thinking it's going to be like 15 pairs a year.
Do you keep stats on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. Dorky.
Love it.
Absolutely.
Love it. No, I mean, how could you not?
Seriously, that's one of the things that appeals to me. I love the measurability of running and not necessarily the competition, but improving myself. So that's what. And I'm not much of a runner, but that's what always engages me.
Yeah, that's always been my motivation. I know I'm not going to win any races or anything like that, but it's always been just like improving upon what I did last year. So like I was tracking what the temperature is, what the wind speed was.
That's awesome.
All that type of stuff. I mean, it was just like ridiculous.
And so is that like an app on your phone, or is that like a watch? Do they make specialty?
No, for my GPS watch, it'll track like how far I went, my pace, time, calories, all that type of stuff. But for like temperature and all that type of stuff, I'd use like Runner's World.
Okay.
So they've got something on there, like an online log that you can use. So, and then it'll graph it out for you too, to be able to see how many miles you ran for the month, for the year, all that type of stuff. So. A little nerdy.
That's awesome. No, that's one of my favorite parts of the whole process.
So
the stats that go along with it.
That's awesome.
I mean, Adam could be your official statistician even.
I'd love to keep stats and give you some analysis.
Perfect. Done. I'll hire you.
Sign me up. I got to ask one thing just because. It sounds like in the 50-miler, it was lax enough. You could probably stop, take a bathroom break. Yeah. Right?
Yeah,
so is that's not really normal in marathons? I don't really know. People say like, you just go, man. I don't know. Is that true? Like,
you know, there's a term out there called like the runner's trots.
Okay.
But it's pretty very common.
Specific shorts. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, so it catches it, so it doesn't run down your leg. No, they have. For marathons and stuff, they'll have like porta-johns out there and stuff, but they did not have those at this one. And that's always been my biggest worry, is just having to take a dump mid-race.
Right.
So there's always a couple of things I would always bring with me. My phone, something to eat and drink, and then teepee.
Toilet paper. That's planning ahead right there.
But that's brutal. But I mean, to tell you the truth, for doing that race, I didn't have, you know, the trots come along
which is kind of amazing, though, because, I mean, your nerves are probably crazy at that point. So it's probably very easy to get an upset stomach.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, like, before the race, overactive digestive system.
I believe it.
And
then you're cleaned out. Big deal.
You should drink some of that orange stuff they give you before a colonoscopy.
Well, I've just got that naturally.
No, Doc, I'm good. I'll be cleaned out, I promise.
But yeah, during the race, man, I did not have to stop and use the restroom.
Well, that's awesome.
Barely at all. Yeah. I think give me a gold star for that one.
Yeah, that's good. So now it's time for 3 random questions. Number 1, if someone made your life into a movie or TV show, what would it be called?
I'm laughing just at the anticipation.
Oh, man.
I'm laughing.
This is going to be awful.
Yeah.
I've always just closely related myself to Lloyd Christmas. And so probably Dumb and Dumber 3, next one's coming out. So there you go.
All right, good answer. Everybody loves Lloyd Christmas, you know.
How can you not? Funny.
Yeah.
So if you were trying... to flush an enemy out, read this very well.
I got you. If you were trying to flush an enemy out of a hiding spot and your only weapon was a smell, what smell would you use?
I think we just answered that in
the runner's trots
segment. The runner's trots.
Give them the old scoop and feed.
Scoop and feed. I think it's good.
It's very effective.
I, you know, personally, I was thinking vomit or dead animal. There's something about both of those things.
Skunk,
I don't know. Yeah, skunk, there's something different about a skunk. I rode my bike through a fog of skunk one time that was the strongest I'd ever smelled, and it gets really weird.
It stays with you, too.
Yes, it was on me.
Yeah.
Like, I was riding my bike to work a few years back. Yeah. And I was riding along through the sidewalk, and it was just so thick and heavy. It's like you taste it. It's on you. It's on my stuff. I could smell it. Hung it up in a locker. Could smell it when I got it out of my locker later. Just
brutal.
Pretty much got sprayed by a skunk.
I would have to say, with a lot of the running that I've done, like out at the corner at 60th and Burlingame, there was this dead wolf. Really? That was just like rotting at the corner, and I remember running past that the first time, and I swear you could just still taste it.
It's a truly
tongue.
Awful smell.
I mean, it was just rotting animal.
Yeah, so, rotting maybe. Animal. I think that's what I'd throw in there to get my enemy out.
That's gross.
It's pretty sweet.
Okay, moving on from there. Tony, you want to?
So if you were a box of cereal, what kind of cereal would you be and why?
I have no idea. But the only thing that comes to mind is Count Chocula. And I have absolutely zero reason why, just because it sounds good and it's seasonal. It makes no sense.
It's rare.
No, it's a great pick.
And because I'm craving it. So,
yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I have no idea.
That's the one I would have guessed for you, actually.
So. See, I was pinning him as a Lucky Charms.
That's
I don't know why.
I was definitely staying away from Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah.
I would be Fruity Pebbles. I get that.
But
well, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, I guess that about wraps it up, though. But thanks for talking with us, man. It's great. It's awesome to hear about all that stuff. Very interesting.
Really interesting. It's funny because, you know, I've known you for quite a while, and I've known you probably since almost the beginning of when your buddy challenged you. Yeah. And I didn't know the story. So that's really awesome. It tells me that I don't talk to you often enough.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Trav. So, Travis, that was sweet.
That was sweet.
Talking with Travis.
There's so much in that interview that we probably really shouldn't even expand upon.
It speaks for itself. The content is there. The material is there.
That's true. That is true. I think it's so cool, though, that it all started because a guy said, "Nah, I don't think you can do it."
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought, too. I think the interesting thing there is he's running a 50-mile race, right? I'm not, right? So initially I'm thinking, well, this guy's got to be way different from me. There's like, he's got something I don't, you know, I can't do that. But you know what? He's driven by pride and anger just like me.
All right? So like all of us.
Yeah. So he starts out running his first 5K?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, doing it just because somebody told him he couldn't. And then he runs his 50-mile race when he's super ticked off about not qualifying for Boston and decides, hey, I'm going to sign up for a bunch of marathons. I'm signing up for a 50-mile race. He did it out of anger, and I think that's great.
That's how you grow, man.
That's how you grow.
You take your experiences and you turn them around.
Double down. Say, I'm digging in.
50 miles. Holy crap.
Yeah. So anyways, it was great talking to Travis. That was awesome.
Yep. Thanks for joining us, Travis. We appreciate it.
So let's move on here to your new favorite band segment. I want to tell you about a band called Disco Doom. Tony, have you heard of them?
You know, I have, but only because of you.
Okay, I've told you about them before.
Didn't you see them in a basement?
I saw them in a basement, yeah. So these guys are from Switzerland, all right? They're on the Exploding in Sounds record label, and that label has another one of my favorite bands called Avlov on it, which, by the way, is kind of a good way if you find an indie band that you like. You can kind of look and see, okay, they're on this label. What other bands are on that label? And you can kind of poke around to find some cool stuff.
Well, I know, at a high level, I'm always looking for new bands to listen to. I have a tendency to stay a little bit more mainstream, but why don't you real quick go into what your tools are? I think a lot of people that may be listening might have some interest in finding bands.
I'm a fan of the Slacker Radio app. I find that You know, works a lot like Pandora or any of the other, you know, Spotify a little bit. It works like them. You know, you plug in a band or a song that you know, and it'll kind of try to find artists you like that might be similar.
But it digs a little deeper than a Pandora, right?
Yeah, I think it goes a little deeper. You're going to find some stuff that's a little bit more off the beaten path. You know, and allows you to do the same thing that the other apps would do, which is mark something as like, I don't like this. Don't play this band. Don't play that song. Or I do like this. I do like this band. I like this song. So that's one way. And also through SoundCloud, which SoundCloud is basically an app that allows anyone and everyone to post audio files of all sorts. So you end up with podcasters, people doing just interviews, and then a lot of musicians. It's a little tougher on SoundCloud. I think it requires a little more work to dig through so much content because it's free. Anyone can go out there and post whatever. Hey, I'm in my room. I played a Stone Temple Pilots song with my guitar, and I'm posting it on SoundCloud. But there are certain ways that I have found helpful to find stuff that I've liked. Some things like there are people who are repost. So Indie Rock Repost is a user on SoundCloud, and they will kind of find other people on SoundCloud they like and post, and then you'll get to hear who they're running into. So you get them feeding you with new bands. And then you also can, like I mentioned, looking at the record labels for ideas, you can go and find the Exploding in Sounds SoundCloud account, and they will be posting all sorts of stuff that they have going on with their label.
Or you guys, if you're like me, you can rely on Adam. So just listen to this podcast, and he'll tell you the next cool band to listen to.
So you can do all that stuff. But back to Disco Doom. I saw Disco Doom in 2014, in March of 2014, in a basement of a house in Easttown, which is a specific neighborhood in Grand Rapids, kind of an artsy neighborhood, kind of that sort of scene.
Underground music scene.
Yeah, so there are some houses there that put on shows occasionally.
Such a crazy concept.
Yeah, yeah. Bands playing in a basement.
I think you should sign up for that.
That would be pretty cool.
No, I mean for people to play in your basement.
That's what I'm talking. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I know what you mean. And that would be awesome.
I think your wife would like that too.
I think my neighbors would like it.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things though. In Easttown, they can do this, and occasionally they might have a complaint, but for the most part, the neighborhood's just okay with it.
That's
so
really cool.
It's a great environment for this stuff. So Avlov was touring with Disco Doom, and they made a stop at this house, and I found out about it like the day of. And I went there, and it was, I was not familiar with Disco Doom, and was just blown away by their live performance. It was just awesome. So it was really great to see these guys in a basement. Like, I saw this awesome band from Switzerland in a basement with me, and it was not a well-attended show on a Wednesday night at like, I think they started playing at like 10, 11.
How sweet would it be if Wild Bears Attacked Elephant got to play in some Swiss basement?
Yeah, maybe I should go to Switzerland and play over there.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to play one of their songs called Rice and Bones. It's one of my favorites of theirs. And you could find this song and more of their stuff at discodoom.net. So check their site out. Like them on Facebook. These guys are awesome. So we'll play their song here at the end of the episode. Let's get some thank yous out there. Thank you to Travis yeah. Alt for stopping by and talking to us.
Appreciate it. Taking a lunch away from running for once.
That's right.
You know, if you fail the next marathon, it's not us. If you go to Boston and, you know, do terrible, it's not because you missed that one training at lunch.
Yeah, it wasn't us. Not our fault.
Nope.
Thank you to Wild Bears for the intro music and to Disco Doom for the song you're going to hear at the end. Thank you to you guys for giving us a listen. If you like the show, please subscribe through your favorite podcast app. Give us a rating. Follow us on Facebook. As Tony mentioned, we're How'd That Happen? HOW'D That Happen. And you can email us at hthpodcast@gmail.com. And we'd love you to email us, tell us how much you hate us.
those might even be more fun.
Yeah.
Although I don't want to encourage that.
Well, whatever.
But it could be fun. We might even read it. The bad ones we could read online on the show.
I'd love to.
Maybe the good ones too.
Well, yeah.
We're not going to discriminate.
So tell us how much you hate us. Tell how much you love us. Maybe you just write us this crazy love letter and we'd love to read that too.
We can read it all sappy-like.
Yeah. You could tell us what you think we should be doing.
Yeah, if you have a friend, if you know somebody, if you're doing something that sounds really cool that would make people say, how'd that happen? Let us know. We'd love to talk to them.
Yeah, for sure. And so, yeah, give us some feedback. Give us a shout. And finally, Tony, this goes to you and to all of our listeners.
I'm listening.
Don't forget to take the time to enjoy life and tell someone how much you love them.